All right, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Grind Podcast, where I talk hunting, entrepreneurship, and the daily grind and what it takes to earn success. I'm your host, Eric Van Workum. I am joined by Aaron Van Workum. What's up, dude?
What's up?
How you doing?
I'm great. I'm excited for today.
What are you most excited about?
I'm just excited to learn from a pro.
I know. we're a bunch of rookies. Let's just introduce him right now. But first off, this podcast is presented by Mountain Tough Fitness. You can get 6 weeks free using code MULEYFREAK. If you're going to be baiting bears this spring, backcountry DIY spot and stock baiting bears, you got to get your body dialed in shape. And Mountain Tough Fitness is just the program to do it. We've been doing it for weeks and weeks now. I can't tell you how good I feel. I've actually been running a 5K before I've been grinding on it, what they call it in the app, a gym daily. And basically it's a program live coached with an athlete that I get to keep up with. And I've been running a 5K and then getting into my gym daily. The 5K is just my warm up, getting me in. And I feel amazing. How you feeling, Aaron? What are you working on?
I feel awesome. I've been doing weighted pack incline. And then I do an MGD, minimal gear daily, for Mountain Tough Fitness. And it's nice because I don't have a bunch of equipment. So you just need some kettlebells, dumbbells, pull-up bar. And, it kills you.
Yeah,
even with minimal gear.
I'm telling you, awesome. Guys got to jump into the Mountain Tough Fitness app, use code MULEYFREAK, get 6 weeks free. Great folks, great program, and I feel amazing. All right, without further ado, let's introduce the man, the myth, the legend, Nick Hopkins from Soda Springs, currently residing in Pocatello, owner, operator of Boar Masters. What is up?
How's it going, guys?
Good, man. Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited for spring.
Spring is your season.
Yeah, it is.
Man,
it's our busy season, and it's our exciting season to go chase bears.
Awesome, man. Well, I love the Boar Masters product. This podcast is going to be on how to bait bears. And we're going to ask Nick for some tips and tricks on how to do that. There's a really popular blog article we have that Aaron wrote on the 10 tips for DIY black bear hunting. And first off, let's talk about how you started Boar Masters. How long you been going? Tell us about that journey.
Yeah, so started Boar Masters back in 2009. I actually had an archery pro shop. I started an archery pro shop when I was 18 years old, and we started off I had a $300 credit card, and we just started bringing in some products, and slowly kind of grew up from there. That started in 2005. And then in 2009 is when I actually started baiting bears.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, when you're baiting bears, you're always trying to come up with new ideas and do a lot of, you know, your own DIY type stuff.
Yeah, you're trying to trick them, right? Trying to fool their noses.
Exactly. Trying to come up with little secrets and little things that you think are going to work better than others. And anyways, we had developed this. I had come up with this powder stuff, which is our feed additive, which today is still our best seller. And that's kind of what we started the company with, was just that sole product.
Okay, explain what the feed additive is.
Yeah, so the feed additive is 100 times sweeter than sugar. It's what we was trying to do is, you know, we didn't have a lot of really good sources for bait. And so we're using sweet feed and corn and you know, just all kinds of really bland stuff. Bread, we used a lot of bread too, which we don't use much bread now. It's so heavy. But we was trying to flavor it, you know, so we started out with sugar and Jell-O and all kinds of different things, you know, trying to just sweeten that product up, because we understood that the bears, you know, I was brand new to bear baiting. So I kind of had to learn by trial and error. And I didn't have a mentor or anybody in my family or anybody that, you know, baited bears. So I kind of just had to get after it.
Yeah.
And I knew those bears liked, you know, sweets. You know, you get on the internet, you search around. And those bears really like sweets. So we was trying to develop a, you know, something to pour on those bland baits to try to sweeten them up.
Mm-hmm.
And we come up with this feed additive. Anyways, that's what kind of started the company. That was clear back in 2009. It's 100 times sweeter than sugar. You mix that product with your bait, and the bears get addicted to it. You just get a lot more daylight activity, and those bears just want to come in and consume more feed. Once that product kind of launched, then we started into developing the sprays and the liquids and the attractants and the lures. And then it's just kind of growing from there.
Gotcha. That's awesome, yeah. Man. So 10 years. Well, how many years is that?
14 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do math this morning. Let me drink some more of this.
Yeah, so 13 years, you know, and we did our feed additive for probably the first, I'd say from 2009 to 2013 or 14 was just feed additives. That's really all we had. We had some paste and some different things. We had some fish paste. We actually had a lot of products we don't even offer anymore. But we kind of, got the feed additive kind of helped build the company, and then we was able to add the syrups and the sprays and the convictions. And I can kind of explain how some of that, you know, happened later on. But yeah, that's kind of what started. And still today, that feed additive is our best seller.
Yeah. What's the most important part of setting up a bait? Like, I'm going to ask you a bunch of random questions. Aaron, you feel free to chip in here and ask any questions you might have. But what's the most important part of starting a bait? Selecting a location, yes. Obviously.
Yeah, I feel like location is key. Trying to... Not only location, just, you know, where you're going to go and what unit and what area, but location in the particular area you're going to bait. So, you know, I like to be able to have a good entrance and exit in and out of those bait sites. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to hike in. I don't mind hiking in a long ways if I've got an easy, not necessarily an easy hike, but maybe a trail or a logging road or something to where I'm not making a lot of racket and a lot of noise trying to get in and out of those bait sites.
Sure. Okay.
Trying to just keep an easy entrance and exit out of those bait sites, whether it's a mile or, you know, a couple hundred yards. I just want to be able to, you know, get in and out without disturbing the whole forest.
Yeah. Does it matter if they're here in your vehicle?
Yeah, I don't think so, really. I used to think it did. And the more we've got, I mean, we're usually baiting in areas that we've got a little bit of road traffic anyways. Uh-huh. And whether it's bear hunters or mushroom hunters or just recreational, it seems like we've always got the dirt bikes and the four wheelers. And, you know, we'll be sitting on our bait sites and sometimes we can hear people talking, or especially the dirt bikes are really loud. But, you know, once all that dies down, it seems like in the evening, you know, most everybody goes back to camp. They'll go back to camp, or they'll, you know, they're out of the woods. And then that last few minutes of light is when we're usually seeing bears anyways. Mm-hmm. And the forest is pretty quiet at that time.
Sure.
So I like to get away from it if I can, but I don't know if it's necessary, if it's a must.
Gotcha. What about when you're, go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say, is there a lot of mushroom hunters? I didn't know. Is that a popular sport?
Oh man. Yeah, it is. We probably run into more mushroom. We run into people carrying buckets, picking mushrooms than we do anything. That's we don't run onto a lot of shed hunters even or anything. If we run onto a guy in the woods that's not baiting bears, he's usually looking for mushrooms.
Well, I got to get into that.
I'd love actually some real mushrooms. Have you ever had them? They're so good.
Yeah, they are really good.
They're unreal. I used to have them in Sweden. I lived in Sweden for a couple of years. And during the summer, they'd go on, they call them swamp. That's how you say mushroom. And they'd make these sandwiches with this special dressing. It was unreal. What are they called? Yeah.
Morels.
Morels. There we go. Yeah. Morels. Yeah. So good.
And there's different styles and different kinds, but you know, most people are just hunting the general morel. Yeah. And these guys will get buckets, you know, they're carrying around buckets full of these things. And I think a lot of guys sell them too. Yeah. They're worth some money.
They're good. Anyways. So you're going into your bait. Are you quiet going into your bait? Are you trying to make a little ruckus? Are you trying to bang on the lid of the whatever bait you're carrying in, like tell them the dinner bell's coming? I mean, how's that work?
Yeah, so what we do, when we're baiting, we don't really care. We try to bait before 11 o'clock and even noon at the latest. We're not trying to be in there baiting on the same hour, within the same hour we're hunting. So we're not baiting at 4 or 5 p.m. and then getting in the blind. We usually like to go up, bait 11, noon, before then. And then get out of there and then come back. We like to be back in the bait site by 3:30 at the latest, 4 o'clock at the latest, but 3:30 is kind of what we like to be. When we're baiting, we're not worried about being quiet. We're not worried about being scent free. We're pretty much just plowing in there. We've got our, you know, I hunt with my wife and my kids. Sometimes we'll have some friends and everybody's getting packs loaded up and we're just moving in and setting baits.
Gotcha.
Filling those barrels. We're not really banging on them, but we're not trying to be quiet. We're just in there baiting bears and filling those barrels and picking up all the garbage and out we go.
You know?
And if we have to go to the bathroom while we're there, honestly, we go. We go find a tree and go behind a tree and we're just not too worried about that. We want those bears to know that we're the ones feeding them.
Gotcha.
And just kind of starting that comfortability effect.
Sure. So you're more about getting them comfortable, having them smell you a little bit versus trying to be 100% set free.
100%. I, when I first started, you know, like I said, I didn't have anybody to really show me the ways. And so I was always trying to change clothes before I got to the bait site, stay away from the campfires, just all those things, you know, trying to stay as scent free as I could. So I would bait in certain clothes, and then I'd come back to camp, and then I'd hike up there, and halfway up to the bait site, I'd be changing clothes and trying to be, you know, as scent free as I could. And
just not necessary, you found out.
It wasn't necessary. I mean, we've killed a lot more bears probably the last 10 years, not even worrying about any of that. We're more after just comfortability.
Gotcha.
So I got a question. How many baits do you run a year?
So in Idaho, we're usually running 4, sometimes 5 if we're going to put out another trial bait. We usually have 3 active, and then that fourth one is kind of a backup. Fourth or fifth one is kind of a backup bait. Those ones I can say usually aren't as focused on. So those fourth and fifth baits, a lot of times I'll run them in a feeder barrel, which we can talk about, but a feeder barrel is just a slower version of a bait barrel. It's got smaller holes. They got to roll it around. It feeds smaller amounts at a time. And that way I don't have to try to keep those baits. I don't have to focus on those baits as much. Gotcha. You know, they'll last me two weeks, maybe even more, because we're filling those full of, you know, trail mix and peanuts and things like that. But we'll keep an eye on those baits, because there's times where, you know, we'll check those cameras and it's like, hey, we've got a target bear we want to go after on those baits.
So, I've never heard of that. That's really interesting. That feeder bait.
So we'll run 4 to 5 in Idaho, and then in Wyoming, I run 2. And mainly in Wyoming, I run 2 just because you've got to set your bait sites in Wyoming in order to keep those sites. So we'll run 2. Every person can have 2 bait sites. If you register, you can register up to 2, I guess I'd say. So 2 in Wyoming and 4 to 5 in Idaho.
So most people, if they haven't set a bait or maintained a bait or hunted a bait, they don't know how much work goes into one bait. So kind of explain how much work actually goes into setting your baits, because from my experience, and maybe I'm doing it wrong, but it's a ton of work.
How much feed and how much lure is on one bait?
Yeah. So, good question. It is a lot of work. Just one bait site alone, we'll go through 150 to 200 pounds of bait a week.
Wow.
These are established bait sites that have a lot of bears. Initially set a bait site, established bait sites always get better over time. And, you know, so they get hit harder. So say someone's brand new, they're probably going to go through at least that 150 max, maybe a little bit less. They might get away with 100 pounds. But the problem is if those bait sites go dry for 2 or 3 days, you know, so there's a lot of bear baiters in Idaho. And them bears won't wait around for you to fill that up. They'll just wander and find that next bait site.
So they'll leave the bait if you're not keeping it full and fed.
Yeah, exactly. So usually you can get by with a day, maybe 2, if there's, you know, some remnants and stuff on the ground that they can come in and search for. But much more than that, you're starting over.
So cardinal rule, don't let it run out.
Yeah, don't let it run out. Like that's a key factor. Consistency on that bait site is key, and keeping that bait site full is part of that.
So what are you putting on there for lure then? And what's the feed? Is it dog food? Is it bread? Is it marshmallows? Is it a combination of something? Is it grain? Is it pellets? And then what lure are you putting on top of that Boarmaster's lure?
Yeah. So what we're doing is we'll usually use, so we bring in bulk bait every year too. We bring in 4 to 5 semi loads of bulk bait, and 90%, well, 80% of that is trail mix. We'll bring in a couple 100,000 pounds of trail mix, and we sell that to, you know, the bear baiting market as well. And we've actually really started using that because it's a high quality bait. So it's got a lot of protein. It's got peanuts in it. It's got a lot of your fats and your sweets, high protein mix. So it's a good mix for the bears, but it does run upwards of, you know, here in Idaho, 40 to 50 cents a pound to buy that product. So it's expensive, you know, for guys that want to run even one bait. So what we'll do is use that product, that trail mix, and we'll mix it with the cheaper stuff. So all year long, we're saving our table scraps. We're saving our breads. We're throwing stuff in the freezer. We're kind of just getting everything that could be garbage that we're tossing anyways, and we're saving it to help stretch that dollar.
Gotcha.
You know, even though we sell it, we're still trying to do everything we can to cheapen it up as much as we can. So what we'll do is usually mix in 2 to 3 buckets of trail mix, with, you know, 2 to 3, 4 buckets of breads, leftovers. Another really good one is popcorn. You know, you can go to Sam's Club and buy a 50-pound bag of popcorn and pop it on a little Camp Chef fairly quickly. It's light, it's good filler, and it mixes well with the other baits, and it's cheap.
And it's, yeah, it's light to pack in, like you said.
Yeah, super easy. Where the trail mix gets heavy, so if you mix in some you know, some popcorn and some other things, A, it stretches your dollar, and it lightens up your load a little bit too.
Gotcha.
So once we do that, once we set up the, you know, the trail mix and the, you know, the filler, throw in some of that, usually at least two buckets of trail mix. And then we'll have, like I say, 2 to 3 buckets of some other variety of dog food's good. Sweet feed's good. Any of your agricultural type, you know, your farm feeds are good. Anything really you can find to stretch that mix is great. And then we'll usually, I'll take and mix that. We'll use like an icing or our sweet surrender paste, and we'll line the inside of the barrel with that as well.
Gotcha.
And what that does, if that barrel does go empty, those bears will sit there. That buys you time. So those bears will sit there for days trying to get that icing out of the inside of that barrel.
That's genius.
Cause we're trying to do the same thing as everybody else. You know, we're working all week and then we're baiting Friday through Sunday. So, you know, we'll bombard it on Sunday. And then when we come back Friday, a lot of times it's empty, and it's been empty for probably at least a day. But if you watch on the camera, you'll see those bears coming in and trying to get that icing and that our sweet surrender paste out of the inside of that barrel. So that helps buy you a lot of time. So that's what we'll do on the inside of the barrel. And then I usually put a little bit on the outside too, just so the bears get it on their paws and they track it around. We will mix our like conviction lures in with our fryer oil. I recommend everybody gets a little bit of fryer oil. You can usually pick it up for free, and you pour that in front of your bait barrel. That way, you know, you want to get scent on those bears, because then those bears become your marketing guys. Those are the guys that are advertising your baits, right?
On the pads of their feet.
Yeah. On the pads of their feet. So they create that wagon wheel effect. So every direction they go is just another spoke of a wagon wheel. Your bait is that wagon wheel, and you've got all those scent trails. And we do that every time. When we initially set a bait site, we will usually pour a fairly large amount, upwards of, you know, 2 to 5 gallons. I'll usually dig a little bit of a depression there in front of the bait barrel, and we'll fill that full. We'll put in a little bit of our conviction. Our conviction is a concentrated product that it's not a flavor additive, but it's super strong on the smell. So you mix that in with that fryer oil, you pour that down, and then those bears are stepping in that, and that's a really loud lure that they can, you know, track around. And that's how you get such a high density of bears to your bait site, is just spreading that scent.
Gotcha.
Once we do that, we will usually do like a 100 to 200 yard radius around our bait site with our sprays. Once again, our sprays are an attractant. They're not an edible. We'll spray everything high and low. So we're just trying to get as much scent drift and thermal activity as we can on those, using those sprays. And the sprays are nice because you can spray 20, 30 feet high in the air, and down low, and just, you know, you walk around. And I'll usually put out, when I initially set a bait site, I'll put out 1 to 2 bottles of spray.
Yeah. 1 to 2 bottles. That's good to know.
1 to 2 bottles.
We're addicted to those spray. It's fun to spray. Yeah.
Now that's expensive, but if you think about that, the sooner you get your bears to the bait site, the cheaper everything's going to get at the end of the day. You know, if you're running, if it saves you a week, if you get bears on your bait quicker and you can get the job done sooner, just that 1 week's worth of travel and saving another whole bait, you know, the sooner you're done, the cheaper everything gets. I mean, it's saving you fuel, it's saving you bait, it's saving you time. So I just figure there's no sense in dragging your feet when you initially set that bait. You just as well bombard it, do everything you can, because the sooner that bait's active, the sooner everything gets better. You can start that comfortability. You can start, you know, getting those bears consistent. Everything just starts a lot quicker, and those baits get a lot better the sooner the bears get there.
So in Utah, we can't use a barrel. And so we have to set up a, you know, kind of a little, you know, we still set up a station. And there's different ways you can do it. You can do a backstop, or last year we built kind of a trough with sticks, so it wasn't a tall backstop. So if a bear came in, we could still shoot. You know, we didn't want a backstop that was in the way of a shooting lane. But I still see how some of those things you were talking about translate, like the paste inside the barrel. You could still paste all the, you know, the twigs and the sticks and the logs around to kind of keep them around. But I'm was just wondering, have you ever baited somewhere that you couldn't use a barrel, or are you always using a barrel?
I'm always using a barrel. Well, I can't say that. Sometimes we do set out baits, like trial baits in Idaho, that we'll just bait on the ground. And we're kind of doing something similar there. We're usually just finding like a tipped over tree or a hole, you know, something we can dig a depression in the ground and just kind of pile that bait in there and then throw, you know, a bunch of logs and stuff over it. But once those baits get active, we always try to get a barrel in there, unless it's just too far of a hike. You know, then we'll just continue to do it, you know, that way. So yeah, but you're right. You can still use those same strategies, whether you're using a bait barrel or not. For example, even Wyoming, we can use bait barrels, but we can't bait on the ground. And so all the bait has to stay in that barrel.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you can't bombard the ground. And technically, if that bear rakes it all out on the ground, you're responsible to put it all back.
Oh, really?
They're pretty strict on their baiting on the ground thing, but they do allow us to have barrels. And so we will still coat the inside of the barrels with the icing. And then we try to just do, you know, don't always work that way. Or sometimes our holes will get pretty big to where that bait's just constantly falling out and we're just constantly shoveling it back in.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times those bears are picky. You get those big boars and those big bears and they're searching for a certain item. And so they'll dig through that barrel to try to find that last chunk of meat or that last M&M or whatever gotcha. They just really want. And so they're constantly pouring that stuff out.
Is that an age thing where they're old enough, they know what they like and what they're looking for?
Is it a preference thing based
on their personality?
Yeah, I feel like a little bit of both. I feel like they're big enough that they find enough food that they're not starving by no means. They figured out, you know, where the food sources are over the years. And so they've got a lot of the natural food sources. And then, of course, being a big boar, they're probably a little more aggressive on the ungulates and stuff too.
Sure.
So I feel like, yeah, they've kind of figured out what they like. They know where their food sources are, and they're not eager. They're just saying, hey, you know, this is what I like, and that's all I really want. So they get a little tougher. You know, a lot of people think it's just, you know, bears come in and hammer bait sites, but those big boars, they don't. You know, they'll come in and pick and choose.
We've kind of seen them be choosy too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they'll hammer pretty hard. They'll sit on those bait sites for days. But generally, it's those sows and cubs that are really hammering those bait sites.
Yeah.
And the boars are coming in. And the smaller boars, they're just coming in and trying to eat as much as they can before the big boar comes in.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll see those small boars come in and they're just hammering. They're just feeding it in as fast as they can. And they're looking around. And the minute they book it out of there, you know, they're just trying that pecking order.
Sure.
They're just trying to get in there before that big bear gets in there.
Yeah. I have another plug for one of your attractants. So last year, my cousin drew his limited entry Utah hunt, and he's super cheapskate, right? So he was just using breads and oils and frying oil and other stuff that he had, like gummy bears that his buddy had saved, and he just super cheap, right? And we were having a heck of a time getting bears in for a couple weeks. Like, we'd get one.
It's kind of frustrating, wasn't it?
Oh, it was way frustrating. So we set up a second bait. I finally talked him into setting up a second bait. Still wasn't getting hit for a few days. So I ordered Boar Masters for him, shipped it to his house, and he started putting it out. We immediately got this giant sow with yearling cubs. Like, they were big cubs. Like, you're like, oh, what? You could barely tell that they were her cubs. And she was a tank too. And so we had her on for a few days, still not getting, I think we had one tiny little boar come in. And then I had ordered a sow and heat spray. And we put that on one afternoon. And by that night, we finally had a mature boar coming in. Like, it was immediate that afternoon. And so that was really interesting to me. I had never used it before, but I was like, oh, I want to give this a try just in case. And in Utah, you know, you're baiting in late May, June. So I'm like, we're getting closer to the rut. And so anyway, right. we sprayed that sow and heat all over, and we had a boar, mature boar in that night. And then we ended up killing them the next day.
So long story short, the stuff works.
Yeah. And I was curious how you came up with the sow and heat too. That's pretty interesting.
How did you do that? Like, did you go to a scientist at Harvard or what?
Yeah, no kidding. Guys always ask us, they're always like, you know, how do you guys capture that stuff? How do you collect it? You know, all that.
You got some bears breeding in the backyard?
Yeah, it gets rough. That's why I'm always all beat up and, you know, my nose is crooked and all that stuff. It's all from chasing those bears around. No, that was a pretty cool product. We come out with that product. Oh, geez, that was probably back in 2017. I want to say somewhere in there. And a lot of our products I did have, so I didn't have a mentor on the baiting side, but along the way, after I started the product about 2015, I met a trapper that's been in the industry for, gosh, probably 50 years. I mean, he's been trapping for a long time. He's not trapping now because he's so old now. He's just, you know, he can't get around. But he gave us a lot of help on the lures and the different ways to mix stuff and different things like that, that kind of got the ball rolling. He didn't really have any recipes for bears because he was big into bobcats and coyotes and beavers and all that stuff. But the information he had is kind of when he started talking to me about glands. And I was already getting, we started the urine first without the sex glands. And he says, really, the woods are full of urine. You're not doing anything special. It's the gland that is bringing those animals in. That's the curiosity, is that gland. And he says the gland is the ticket with all trapping, you know, is the glands. If we got a source to start getting the bare glands, that's when the urine, I mean, people started noticing, like, that, you know, like you'd said there, that it really started working quickly. Rather than just being a plain urine, it's now an attractant, you know, it's now a gland lure. So yeah, that was pretty cool when that happened. And you know, the bad part with that, I didn't get so much gland. And so we'll sell 300-400 bottles a year, and that's about all the gland we can source. We're trying to get more sources for the sow gland, but it's been tough. The market on bears, even the urine, to be straight up honest, I feel like we're within 5 years of probably not offering that product.
Really?
A lot of our captive bear providers are losing their permits. They're getting attacked. They're losing their licensing. We're down to one provider now.
Jeez, I had no idea.
Yeah. Yep. So it's just, you know, the lions, the tigers, the bears, all that stuff is just getting a lot of heat, and it's just hard to keep those permits. So,
gotcha. Let's talk about the wind. We've talked about some of the lures, the attractants, the sprays, 200 yard radius around, pick a good spot. How to get in your bait, how to get out of your bait. Let's talk about the wind. How do you play the wind when you're deciding whether to sit one of your baits or not?
Yeah, so, you know, we really don't worry too much about it.
Good for you.
Same type of thing. It's that comfortability thing. Now, with that being said, I feel like the wind is still important. We don't necessarily walk up to a bait site. Now, if we have a big boar, we've got to get a little more tricky with the wind. We've got to really try to pay more attention to those bears. A lot of times, you know, we'll wait at the bottom of those canyons until later in the evening to move up until those thermals change. And we're always trying to have our shooting location on the downwind side of those bears. And that's worked, but we've also killed bears that we haven't worried, big bears that we haven't even worried about the wind much at all, because same thing, we've got those bears comfortable with us.
Yeah. Have you killed big bears where, you know, they knew you were there?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, you guys have baited and hunted bears, and a lot of times they walk in, they look right at you. You know, they'll walk up to the tree stand and they'll look right at you, or they'll walk up to our ground blind and they'll look at us, and then they just, you know, they just kind of go to the bait site. But you know, we've had bears come in that I feel like had no idea we were there too. You know, they just, a lot of times, you know, getting late at night and you want to get out of that bait site, sometimes I'll try to, you know, whistle at them or do something to them, try to get them out of there. And they have no clue where that sound's coming from, you know? So, but yeah, we don't really worry about the wind too much. We really try to play more on the side of their feeding instincts. And so every day we're going up and hunting, we're spraying those attractants. We're keeping that scent really fresh on those bait sites. And that way they're going to smell us. They know we're there. Like I said, I used to try to hide from them, and now I don't even worry about it as much. A lot of times I'll wear the same thing that I baited in is the same thing I'm going to my ground blind in. You know, I don't worry about it too much. I feel like I said, those big boars, you got to sometimes get a little tricky. It's a chess match. So sometimes you've got to start, you know, playing that game with them. But most of the time, if you're creating that comfortability and getting those bears used to that bait site, comfortable on that bait site, used to you, and you're not bringing a new guy with you, You know, like the same guys that are baiting are the same guys that are
hunting. I didn't think of that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I learned that. I guided for a while in Wyoming, and I could text my customer that was arriving that week and say, you know, I've got bears on the bait right now as I'm baiting them. You know, they'd be looking at me, watching me fill the barrel. And as soon as the hunter would show up, no bears for 4 days.
They're not comfortable with that guy.
They're not comfortable with that guy. And that's what we kind of learned is it's just like, he's like, how are you walking in and taking pictures of bears and sending to me? And now there's no bears, you know? So he's kind of thinking I'm BSing him.
Yeah.
And then of course,
you know, take it easy on the Irish Spring, buddy.
Yeah. Right. we did have it. That's a funny story. We did have a guy once that showed up and he was straight softener sheets. I mean, it was bad, but anyways, so those guys come in, you know, and if they stay on that bait site for 4 days and they don't start bait hopping, but usually by the fourth day, our customers would be like, hey, put me on a different bait site. I'm tired of this. They'll start getting a little bit upset. And those guys that start bait hopping usually didn't get their bears, yeah. You know, and we just did what they wanted us to do. But those guys we could talk into staying on just be consistent, that bear's eventually going to get used to you. Them guys, fourth, fifth day, they'd start killing their bears. And so same thing there is just a big learning curve for us. It's just like, you know, it's all about new scent. And when I say new scent, that could be new human scent or even new Boarmaster scent, for example. On a night that I hunt, if I've been using cherry for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and I set that bait site with cherry, if I run out of cherry, I would rather walk up and not spray any scent than walk up and spray bacon same night I'm hunting.
You have become a master baiter.
Yeah, right. And for those smaller bears, I don't know that it matters. We could walk up and spray bacon and they would be like, ooh, bacon, and they'd come running in. But those big bears, even though it's a good scent, they're just like something's changed.
Yeah, be consistent with your bait. Be consistent with your lures is what I'm hearing.
Consistency, and that's where we learned consistency was probably number two. After comfortability, consistency. And so so we don't even change up scents. Even if it's a food scent or a human scent, we try not to change up anything as far as that goes. We'll usually stick with the same scent. Now, if it's Sunday and we're leaving for a week, I don't mind switching it up. I'll spray out some bait because them bears are going to come in and check it out. It's just, if we spray it at 5 o'clock and they've never smelled that scent before, more than likely that big bear is not going to come in until after dark. And he's going to be really skittish just because it's something different. Something's changed on that bait site. And it's no different than moving the bait barrel to another tree or anything like that. Never do that on the night you're going to hunt. Don't move your tree stand. Don't mess with anything. And even when we walk in to rebait, we'll stuff the sticks back in the barrel. You know, we usually stuff sticks in the barrel. It just kind of keeps the small critters out. Plus, from a distance, we can see if those bears have been to the bait before we got there because the sticks are in the ground. Yeah. But we don't walk up and put those sticks back in because a lot of times those big bears, they know how they left that bait site. And they'll come in and they know something's different. So consistency, don't change anything. And it just keeps those bears more comfortable on those bait sites. And that's the same with a new hunter. If you got a new hunter coming in, you know, like the old adage of shipping a t-shirt or something, getting their scent on the bait before the day they're going to be there, I feel like it's very critical.
And just a thought I had is I think wind doesn't matter if those bears have been being baited, right? Year after year, right. There's consistency. Eric and I have a remote bait site that they're really finicky on wind. Like Eric hunted there a lot, and the way we had the bait site set up, that big boar that was coming in, he would smell Eric and he just made it hard on him. So we, 3 years later, last year, we went to that same remote bait site. We set it up slightly different with the wind and it worked in our favor, but no one's baited there, you know, since we'd been there 3-4 years prior. So that's just one thing, right. I've kind of noticed on, depending on the bait site, if it's a place that's getting baited every year, the bears know, they're learned. But those remote bait sites, maybe that you're not baiting every year, you got to be a little more careful.
22 sits on that bad boy. 22 oh, really? Sits. Wow. Never killed that bear.
Dang. Yeah, no, I think you guys are spot on. That's something we should talk about is when I say I don't worry about scent, that is for bears that have been on the bait site. Even if a new bear comes in, I feel like scent is critical again, just because that bear is not comfortable with that bait site. So if you have a new bear show up, he's going to be a lot harder to kill too until he gets comfortable. Same with spot and stalk. You know, you're going to have to play the wind, spot and stalk. When I say I don't worry about scent, I don't worry about scent when I've got bears, routine bears that have been on that base site for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Those bears have gotten, they know we're there. They know where we're parking. They know where we're walking in. They're circling those bait sites. You just can't hide from them. You know, they're smart and they'll circle those bait sites, but they just eventually get comfortable. And we play that more than anything. And then there's some bears that are nocturnal and they never get comfortable.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Those are the ones you don't ever kill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Those are why they get big, you know, those big bears. And sometimes you can change those bears a little, but those are bears that have probably been, you know, they've had a dangerous situation they've got themselves into and they've just become nocturnal. And
never forgot it, huh?
Never forgot it.
Whether they've been missed or chased by dogs or hounds or wounded or who knows, you know?
Something really spooked them. Yep.
Yeah.
So I feel like people need to pay attention to scent. You know, I don't want people to get the wrong idea there, but, you know, there's a factor to that.
Gotcha. So paralleling wind would be the bear's nose. How far, what's your thoughts on the bear's nose? Obviously we could quickly Google and see how powerful those are. But how far have you brought in a bear in your estimation? Like how far can you pull them in with your bait?
Gosh, I don't know. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, says bears can smell for miles. And, I've even, talked to a bear biologist that said they watched a polar bear that, you know, I think it was a polar bear or something that they watched for like, it was like 6 or 7 miles come to, a barbecue cooker type thing. It was on the tundra so they could see it forever. And as soon as they lit that thing up, it came in.
Wow.
So I don't know. I mean, we're baiting in thick, dense, dark, deep timber. And I've never really had an opportunity to go out there and say, oh, there's a bear, you know, across the ridge 2 miles away. Let's spray some scent and watch him come in. So I don't honestly know, but we all do know that bears have insane noses. And they did a lot of studies and research on noses of bears to where, you know, these bears are traveling 10 plus miles to cornfields. Now, whether that's from memory or from smell, right, they just seem to show up on these cornfields or these apple orchards or these. And a lot of times it's new bears, new colored bears that have never been to those areas. And they're traveling long distances to get there. And I feel like a lot of that's off of either following other bears scent to those bait areas or feed areas, I guess you'd call it, or they can smell those food sources. And now they start traveling.
Gotcha. Let's talk strategy on blind or tree stand setup. I mean, what do you do there? Try to obviously get a shooting lane.
Yeah. Shooting lanes for sure. I use tree stands for years. And I feel like tree stands are awesome as far as, you know, getting a little bit of elevation, a little bit of visual. You can see better. You can see when those bears are coming in. So you can kind of be ready. What I didn't like about tree stands is when I started hunting with my kids is they were cold. They couldn't sit still. There was a lot of movement. And so here probably, oh, geez, it's probably been 6, 7 years ago, we started hunting ground blinds just because that's when my kids started hunting. And it was warmer for them. They could move around and wiggle. And, you know, it's hard to keep a kid on a bait site. It's hard to keep anybody on a bait site, even when I was guiding. that's tough. Like, you know, it's hard. You hike your ass off in there. And then, you know, you're sitting from 3 o'clock to dark. And that's a long sit. So anyways, we switched to ground blinds and we've loved it. There's some strategy there to try to keep the bears from demolishing that blind every time you leave. You know, you can move well in a tree, in a ground blind. I feel like it does kind of tame down your scent. Like I say, those bears know you're there, but it's not fresh, strong scent, you know, that's just blowing right at them.
Right. I can see that.
It kind of helps contain a little. So it, you know, it's almost like you've been there and baited, but you're gone. And it's warmer. We can sit in those ground blinds and sleep. I mean, we sit there for hours and, so we've switched to the ground blinds. Strategy there is we're usually, you know, on a tree stand, if you're doing archery for sure, I would get 20 yards, 30 max. And I don't even like that. Last year I had a ground blind on a bait site in Wyoming that was 40 and a bad mistake.
Really?
And I knew that. I knew that setting that up, but I just, you know, I shoot a lot and I felt fairly confident and I just thought, you know, this is a chip shot. And a bear came in and I missed that bear twice. I ended up killing that bear the next day And I've got that all on video. I'll have to post it sometime. But and I feel like what happened there is maybe that bear was moving, or, you know, I don't know. I just 40 yards was a poke for that bear. And I would try to keep it less than that. I'm going to move my ground blind up. I usually like 25 to 30 yards if I'm doing archery. And then, of course, you're doing rifle. You can get across the canyon. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we still do rifle. My kids shoot rifle, and we're usually 60, 70 yards in our blinds. Good shooting lanes and a good positioning on the bait barrel. And that's all in your setup. When you get that set up, you know, get that bait barrel positioned to where you get a good broadside shot. Let those bears come in and get comfortable for a sec. Let them come in and feed for a minute. And then as soon as you got a good shot opportunity, take it.
So what happened on that 40-yard shot?
I don't know. It was weird. I can't figure it out. I thought for sure something was wrong. So I shot the first time, and it stuck right in the barrel. And the bear kind of jumped when I shot. And I don't know if the ground blind was amplifying my sound or what. So I thought, what the heck is going on, you know? And I was kind of confused. I threw on another arrow, and I drew back, and I really focused, looked through my peep, and got, you know, everything nice and level. And I shot again, same spot, stuck right in the barrel. I mean, missed the bear completely. And I just, same thing when that bear, when I shot, that bear kind of jumped, and I just thought, what the heck? And so I was on my third arrow and decided, nah, you know, something's up. It's not, that's not right. Uh-huh. So anyways, went back to camp next morning, got kind of in the same situation, sat down on a chair, put the target out there at 40 yards and put three arrows right in the bullseye.
Huh. Nerves, so I don't cam know. Interference.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought, you know, I checked the blind to see if there was any, and I replayed the video to see if I could hear anything hitting the blind or anything there. I can't figure it out. The only thing I can think is maybe I was kind of stretching up to the peep, you know, and trying to kind of reach for it.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, everything was fine. But it was, you know, your minutes before dark.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, you don't have good, you can't see your peep very well in a ground blind. It's dark in there anyways. And then when you get those bears coming in 10 minutes before dark, it's tough. And so if you're doing archery, you've got to be closer.
Yeah.
It's just, there's too many factors there, low light conditions, and you just got to get closer.
I agree. I feel like that's the hardest thing with using a bow is how dark it gets when those bears like to come in. And it is not, I know Eric had this when he had his bait back in 18 or 19, and that bear was coming in every time, like at dark or barely before. And it's so hard to get light through that tiny little hole.
Yeah. We called him Megalodon, and I came to full draw. He stopped on the bait just for a millisecond. It felt like I drew, peep was twisted. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Let down, drew again. He was already walking off the bait. I couldn't see by that time. I couldn't see my pin, and I've been trying to kill that bear forever.
Yeah, it's super tough on with archery. It's just, you know, guys gotta, I mean, and you're what sucks is you're within legal shooting light, even longer than a lot of times you can even be there.
But you're in that dark timber too. That's the other thing.
That's what's killing us, you know? So, you know, a lot of times we're leaving and we get to the truck and we're like, crap, it's not even,
it's still light out.
It's still light.
Yeah.
You know? That's exactly last year. Every time we'd hike out of that, you know, out of that hole in that remote bait, and we get on the ridge and it was like daylight out still.
Yeah. Like, but crap, we should have stayed, you know?
Yeah.
But what good's it do? You know, if you can't see through your peep.
Yeah. 100%. No good.
It's tough. Yeah.
So how important are trail cameras for your strategy and what you do?
I really like trail cameras just because it does give you the opportunity to see what's coming in. It gives you an idea to, you know, kind of have you know, if you want to be a little more selective. And that's what I like about baiting altogether is the selective side of it. You know, you can really know what bears are coming in and what bears you want to target. So, you know, if you've got your sows coming in, you know, if you've got cubs, you know, if you've got some big boars, you can kind of take that opportunity to target a big boar if you wanted to. And, you know, it's the risk you're going to take. You may not get him, but at least the cameras kind of help you give an idea of what you've got on that bait site. And then it kind of helps, you know, we know bears are most active in the early morning and evenings. We don't hunt early mornings at all. We just strictly do evenings.
Why is that? Just seem better, you know, luck?
Better luck. Yeah. Most of it's better luck. We'll usually just wait till around 9-10 o'clock to go bait. And, sometimes we'll have bears on cameras at 6 a.m., but, you know, it's tough to get in there when they're already kind of, you know, they've already hung around that bait site all night, and it just, I hate to kick them off of there.
Yeah.
Where in the evening, I feel like they've kind of went back to their bedding areas. They're probably still not far from those bait sites, but they've kind of went back, took a nap, you know, and it's easier for us to sneak into those sites without bumping them off of there.
Yeah. We've always found too, evenings.
Yeah. Evening's a lot better, especially over a bait site. Spot and stock, I feel like morning, you know, you can do a lot more and maybe get a little bit of activity first thing in the mornings. But yeah, we try to, like, say 3:30 to dark, in the evenings, what we do there. But yeah, cameras are awesome just cause they kind of give us an idea for, you know, what's coming in and what's on the bait sites, and we can focus on a different bait site if that one's still a little slow.
Yeah.
It gives you something to look at the videos on your phone too, while you're sitting in the blind going crazy. You're like, oh, yeah, exactly. Look at,
well, I should be doing this at home. I should be with my family. I've got this to do, that to do.
Well, a lot of times, you know, I feel like that's a big portion of the fun. It's just, you know, sometimes we're too busy to even get on to have enough time to hunt. And, you know, I'll rip up there in the morning and just pull cards and just, you know, I feel like just testing lures, especially for me, you know, testing new products and testing different ideas and different strategies.
Sure.
Game cameras are huge for us just because it's, and that's exciting. That's a success alone. I mean, you set a bear bait and you get bears coming in. Maybe you don't kill those bears, but you know, those game cameras are a success. It's, you know, it's like, hey,
absolutely. It's part of the fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's a huge part.
And segueing into the business side, like, you know, testing a new product, that's got to be fulfilling. Seeing your products work, that's got to be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Super cool. Especially when you can get, like, you know, a particular spray, a particular tree or spray a particular spot and dial that bear right into that exact scent wick. That's pretty cool. Cause you're not just, there could be other reasons that bear came to the bait. So you're like, well, the attractant worked, but maybe he just was coming to the barrel cause he's curious. But when you can put a trail camera out there and just hang like a scent wick and get pictures and stuff, then it's like, okay, now, you know, now we're onto something.
Yeah, for sure. So segueing into, like I said, the business side here, we all know that anyone in the hunting industry, it's really, it's seasonal, right? And then you got bear baiting. I would say that's extremely seasonal. Now, for those that don't know, you're a full-time landscaper, correct? And you have this boar masters here on the side of your full-time gig there. I mean, how is that? How do you structure that? Is everything that you do on the bear baiting side, do you reinvest that money into boar masters? Do you, you know, take that money aside and, you know, is it profitable for you? Do you reinvest that? Do you take your family on vacation every year? Tell me about that. I think people would be interested how you're doing that.
Yeah. So, the landscaping side is our bread and butter. You know, that's what brings in a lot of our money. But now for years we ran with just boar masters. The landscaping is only 4 years old. But it has really helped us. Yeah. Before that I had the archery shop, and then I sold the archery shop and then ran boar masters full time for a period of years there. And my wife, actually, you know, she worked full time, and so we made it work, and I pulled an income off of boar masters. You know, we do ship nationwide, and, you know, I ship a lot back east. We ship a lot to Canada. So I was able to pull an income off of it, but of course not as much as we can pull off of, other industries, you know, other jobs. And so, and I've always paid, we've always had helpers that come in during busy season. So we've always had some payroll there anyways to pay, you know, because like you say, we'll have June and July. Well, June stays fairly steady, but July and August, you know, it's twiddling our thumbs.
Yeah.
You know, but then, about February through first part of June, it's busy. You know, we're just pumping as fast as we can. And, we've added a lot more dealers, particularly this year.
Oh, good.
And we did, we got a product into Shields there in the new Shields in Boise. So that's been a big influx of trying to stay caught up with that. And then my wife actually just quit her full-time job. She's been at a place for 17 years. And she just quit and came full time to work for, and she works for both businesses just because we have to do where we got to do it, you know?
Right.
Sometimes we need the help, but we've got seven guys, and sometimes even during the slow season, we'll, on the landscaping side, we'll have the guys in here packaging, and, you know, we do everything in house. And so there's a lot of labor involved. We mix everything, we label everything, we pour everything.
Good for you. That's incredible.
Yeah. We bring in all the ingredients, and then everything's all got to be mixed here. We've got big commercial size mixers. We went to automation on our bottle filling. So now we've got, we can just push a button and fill bottles. We don't have conveyors or anything fancy like that, but you know, we can fill two bottles at a time by just pushing a button. Yeah. So we've got a lot more automation there as far as that goes. And my wife is basically replaced her income at her 17-year job, which she did really good with. And she pretty much will take the payroll from Boremasters and pretty much run the company, just because she's handling the operations side of things. And then, of course, she's doing a lot of our book work and stuff for Outer Edge, our landscaping company. And while I'm working on still trying to build both companies. So, you know, in the front end, trying to create new products, trying to get more dealers, trying to build Boremasters. And then on the Outer Edge side, we're doing the same thing. We're out there, we're getting new customers, we're trying to grow that business. And everything, the bad part is everything with landscaping and bear baiting is spring.
Yeah. It's all wham bam at once.
All just hits at once. And then we've got this bulk bait, which is a whole nother, you know, headache in a sense. But we bring in this bulk bait and same thing, you know, hey, can someone run to the other warehouse? Cause we've got two warehouses in town. You know, we're just always kind of spread thin this time of year. So, you know, we're doing what we got to do and it's working out well for us.
I like it. I love the grind, brother. I love the grind. I'm looking forward to the day that I get to bring my kids in and pay them to kind of help and teach them to work. I know our grandfather, had us working on the farm at a young age, and that's one of the things I'm most proud of with this business is the opportunity to employ my children one day.
Yeah. No, that's been cool. My daughter and my son come in, and like I said, my wife, and it is a family business, and that's been super cool just to get those guys involved in the, you know, how we're getting customers, and it's been pretty cool for them. They're big into bear hunting too.
That's awesome.
So it's been fun to watch them kind of grow up here. You know, when we started out in 2009, I mean, we had no money. We had a small house. I mean, we were pouring feed additive out of measuring cups on our kitchen table. You know, it was just,
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, we're folding open these bags, you know, and we're dipping it in and we're stirring it around in buckets with a DeWalt drill, you know, and mixing all the different ingredients. And then we're scooping it and pouring it. Oh, it smelled great. But, you know, especially the triple threat, cause it's kind of a pink color. So our noses were always, you know, you blow your nose and you're blowing pink, you know, it's just, you get this pink stuff. Cause it just, you know, it's dusty product. And so but we started out a little tiny house and just pouring that stuff out of a measuring cup. And my kids were, you know, young enough, they're sitting on the table in Indian style, you know, helping.
That's awesome.
You know, it's pretty cool to watch them kind of go from babies to, you know, they're fully, you know, capable of running the company, really. I mean, they know how to mix the products. They know how to pour. It's fun.
That's awesome. Well, guys, real quick, just a reminder, MagView 10 for 10% off MagView products. Use code MuleyFreak10. I repeat, use code MuleyFreak10. Best digiscoping product out on the market. Definitely check that out. MuleyFreak 10 for 10% off MagView products. Nick, man, what else do you have? You got anything, Aaron? Any others? I feel like we covered scent, we covered bait, how to lay a foundation, how to pick a bait. I mean, you've been a wealth of knowledge, Nick. I think your product's incredible. I used it on my 2020 LE bear hunt. Aaron used it last year. We couldn't even get bears in until, we're like, hey, when are you going to buckle down, Clint, and get some Boremasters? As soon as we buckled down and got the Boremasters, we had bears coming in. And I think it varies year to year, depending on, you know, how the weather goes and what they're foraging for and where the bears are at. But the Boremasters definitely brought these bears in. So we believe in the product. Where can they check you out? Shields.com? Or, well, I guess the Boise store in Shields. They can check you out at Boremaster.com.
Yeah. Yeah. So Boremasters.com. And that's also got our dealer list on there. So you can see our dealer list and the other stores that have it. Boremasters.com, we ship daily. And otherwise, you know, Instagram is Boremasters. You can reach out through there. We don't have a shop page or anything on there, but we post a lot of tips and tactics and things on there. They can just get on the website and order and we'll ship it out. This time of year, we're a couple days behind, but we're staying fairly caught up. So
awesome. Well, appreciate you, brother. Subscribe to this podcast, guys. Leave us a review. We can't grow unless you share the show. So please do us a favor and share the show. We'll catch you guys on the next one. Thanks for joining us, Nick.